To order. This is the House Transportation Meeting, and it is 2:15, and let the record show that representatives that are present are Representative Lynn, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Gaddis, and myself, Representative Wilson, and Representative Isaacson. So I would like to recognize that Nancy Hemingway is over here, our House Recording Secretary, and Sam Greeley is our LIO monitor, and my committee aide is Becky Rooney. Yep. And, and before we start, let's go ahead and make sure that your cell phones are off. And today we would like to, we have one bill on the agenda, and that's House Bill 23, the Kibata Bridge. And like other complicated bills, I plan to I plan on hearing all the comments from the sponsor and from the Kibata people today, and we'll put this bill aside then and have any questions from members, but there won't be any public testimony today. We will have this again at another time, and when we get, I think there's going to be a lot of questions from the committee when Kibata has the answers to those questions, then we will hear the bill again. So now the bill is Representative Newman, and his Chief of Staff, Rex Shattuck, is going to present Kibata.
For the record, my name is Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Mark Newman. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we really appreciate the opportunity to come before you and talk about the Kinnick Arm Crossing. As many of you know, your schedules are very busy and complex, and you're in different committees all the time. Representative Newman is presently in finance and will be heading here as quickly as he can. So my part in this would just to be able to ask your indulgence in that until he gets here and really turn as quickly as possible over to Mr. Mike Foster, first stating that HB 23 really amends the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority's enabling statute to provide for a successful procurement of the Kinnick Arm Crossing project and to generate the best value for the state. This bill was written in consultation with the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, Kibata, and as such, they're very well versed and able to answer a lot of questions. If it would be all right with you, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mike Foster to join me to perhaps get into talking about the bill, and then when Representative Newman comes down, he could give you the sponsor's philosophy and answer questions as well, if that would be all right with you.
That would be just fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Michael Foster, and I'm the chair of the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. We have a short presentation, realizing that we just went through many of these slides about 2 weeks ago in the joint transportation overview. If I could ask your indulgence, we'll go through them. I expect to be less than 10 minutes, and then we can get into question and answers. So, okay, just a sec. As we said earlier in the overview, Kibata was set up by statute in 2003 for the purpose of advancing the Kinnick Arm Crossing. You see on the slides there is, I'm sure you're very familiar with the different corridors or the road alignments in the South Central area, the Glen Highway, the Parks Highway, Kinnick Goose Bay, the rail extension to Point McKenzie. You also, I'm sure you're very familiar with the population trend in the South Central area. About 54% of the Alaskans live in the South Central area. There's a little bit less than 300,000 in the Anchorage Bowl area and about 90,000 in the Mat-Su Borough area based on 2011 updated census numbers. The population projections or statistics for the area shows that over the next 25 years, there's substantial growth in the Mat-Su Borough area. Different models show different numbers. They range from about 115% to 119% over 25 years. The other interesting point is that significant growth in the Anchorage area actually occurs from the Eagle River Bridge going north to Klutna. That area over the 25 years also grows by about 74%. Those two growth indicators show that the Anchorage Bowl area is just about out of available land for residential business and commercial and industrial. These are different models. Graphically, it kind of shows you the Department of Labor, an ICER model. There's some discussion over the use of ICER's numbers, and I know Representative Newman was going to address that, so I'll defer to him. The Woods and Pools, which is an independent third-party model, and then Kubota's model. You can see that in 2035, the growth of South Central and significant growth in the Mat-Su Borough area. Sometimes I like to say I look in the rearview mirror to see where I'm going forward, because sometimes it's an indicator of the past. You can kind of see graphically 25 years. In 2010 we used, because that was the census number, 25 years in the past, that's what the population was in Anchorage, the borough, and then South Central, and then you can see in 2035 what our projections show. Shows almost a linear curve, South Central, but it shows a fairly large increase in the Mat-Su Borough. And again, that's availability of land. Now, population, of course, with population comes traffic. Traffic is transportation. Currently at Cloudna, and again, I'm looking at a rearview mirror, and I'll give you the next slide, which actually graphically shows you the two locations. Cloudna, 1985, was about 16,000. In 2035, it's over 30,000, and their projections in 2035 is over 60,000. At Highland, where the sixth lane is, you can also see the growth there. The growth from 2010 to 2035 goes from 50,000 to over 110,000. Again, that's based on the population projections for Eagle River to Eklutna, and then the population projections for the Mat-Su Borough based on the previous slide. But this graphically shows you what's happened in the past from 1985 to 2010, which are actual road count numbers, average daily traffic, and then the projections going forward to 2035.
I have a question that ICER had a population comparison that was different than what you had, and can you explain why there's a difference in those population numbers?
If I could defer to Representative Newman, because I do know that's in his package, I'd hate to take away from his presentation. If he doesn't cover it, I'd certainly be available for the Q&A afterwards. But I do know that he has information on that, and he would like to present that.
Okay, thanks. We'll just wait then.
What happens without a bridge? Again, we looked at the population, we looked at the traffic, and then DOT in 2008 looked at what were the needs based on those population and traffic demands going forward. The Glen from Eagle River North would go to a sixth lane to handle the increased traffic or population, and the Glen from downtown Anchorage to Eagle River North would go to an eight lane or even possibly a 10 lane based on actual traffic counts. The cost in 2008 numbers for those improvements is about $3 billion of federal/match state funding. So in 2008, the estimate that the Department of Transportation had in their long-range plan was about $3 billion in improvements to the Glen Highway. Now looking at a bridge option, the delivery mechanism for the bridge is being looked at as a private-public partnership, a P3 model. The scope of that is a private developer, and we do have three shortlisted firms that we've gone through a fairly rigorous solicitation statement of qualifications. So there are three that are currently shortlisted. They are responsible, and I'll say this probably over and over, and please give me your indulgence on this repetitiveness, but they are responsible for financing. They bring the money to the table. They're responsible for financing it, designing it, building it, operating and maintaining it, and collecting tolls. The draft contract that we're currently working on with the Department of Law is a 35-year concession or contract. What the private developer will give us is a proposal for availability payments in order to make this as attractive as they can for their financial market. There are certain things that the state of Alaska are in through this bill and through our legislation is looking to enhance it, and that's the creation of a reserve fund. The reserve fund handles the initial years when we know that the toll revenue will be short of the availability payments. The $600 million, which is safety lieu, private activity bonds, again, the state is a conduit. We don't secure them. We're not financially obligated to those bonds. All we do is provide a conduit or a obligation for the private partner to go and apply for them. Again, they still have to apply for it. All we do is provide the capacity. And then the TIFIA is the same type of model. We're a conduit. We don't sign for it. We don't have any financial responsibility for it. It's strictly a pass-through. Then also in the contract terms, there is a termination for a convenient clause, which is any point if the state of Alaska decides to exit the contract, which is in almost any kind of lease type agreement, the state has the option to go ahead and terminate for convenience, and there's a payout value for that. Keep in mind that the bridge from the very beginning to the very end is always owned by the state. So once they start construction on it, it is a state asset. They don't get their first payment until it's called availability payment. They will not get a payment until the bridge is actually open for use. So all during construction and everything else, they're financing it, they're funding it. Their first payment comes after ribbon cutting. At that point, I can finish up Representative Newman, or I can just turn it over.
Now, I do want to announce that in the audience we have the Senate President, Charlie Huggins, and then Representative Newman has joined us now. So, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to say thank you again to our Senate President who has a companion bill in the Senate. Madam Chair and members, a few things about this bill that I'd like to address, and some of the safety issues, some of the discussion that's went on, and I'll try and keep it short. We received a letter, you know, at least I did, I think you did yesterday, from Scott Goldsmith from ICER, addressing some numbers and some what he felt, some confusion there. And if I can explain that a little bit, just briefly, when those numbers were done by ICER, actually they were below what the United States Census was. And the, you know, the U.S. Census does a population toll every 10 years in 2010. And so their population forecasts were lower than what the actual census numbers were. And we know that the census numbers obviously can't count everybody on top of that. So if you take the ICER numbers and correct them to where they match up with the population numbers that were done during the census, those numbers and the numbers that were projected by Kibata are within 1 or 2%. And we're still talking about numbers that go from about 85,000, 90,000. You know, ICER says, I believe, 170 or something like that, and in Kibata, 190. But there's the bottom line is there's still a lot of people. I mean, you can nitpick about those numbers all day long, but there's still a lot of people. Another thing that I want to bring to attention is some of the safety issues. And Madam Chair, I've brought along some accident rates. If I could have your staff distribute to your members, that would help explain some of the routes and some of the safety reasons why this is such an important piece of legislation.
Before you get to that point, there was another thing in the ICER report that said, and maybe it wasn't that, maybe it was somewhere else I read it, but that said something about the numbers of cars going across were counted as if it was a four-lane bridge instead of the two-lane bridge, and that that so if you're counting four lanes, then we haven't got the cost of the four lanes in there, and if it's just the two-lane bridge, well then that would make the numbers difference. I did not quite understand the question at that time, but maybe you can clear it up.
Mr. Foster can look at the design. And I don't think the final design has been done yet, Mr. Foster.
Well, after you finish your presentation, I can certainly answer those questions, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And what I wanted to bring to your attention is if you look at the bottom, it's called the fatal and major injury accident rate. And this kind of shows how some of the highways, the highway safety zones, that was of August 2009, and we look at the Pono Silla on the top right. I want to bring attention to the Parks Highway, Lucas Road, the one from Wasilla to Big Lake. At 17.3 is a major accident rate, and that's per 100 million vehicle miles. Kinnick Goose Bay Road at 22.84. And, you know, we hear a lot about the Seward Highway, yet that's a major accident rate of 13.1. And so some of these major accident rates in some of these areas that we're trying to avoid. And if you look at the smallest, narrowest portion in Cook Inn with the little finger that goes up there written under just Kinnick Goose Bay Road there where the bridge would cross, and if you were to go straight north to where it says Wasilla Fishhook, north of Wasilla there's currently plans that would look at different routes that would basically run that traffic up that way. And we've provided money to the Big Lake Community Council, the legislature did 2 years ago, to do some plans on how to do that, so that we're working with the local communities on what happens after the bridge is built. And so what we would do, you know, after this bridge is built, is reduce traffic off of that Glen Highway considerably. Right now we have about 30,000 vehicles come from the Mat-Su down that road every year. And the wear and tear on that road is significant. We do rut rehabilitation. The last time we put money on rut rehabilitation on that was about $55 million. And I just talked to Department of Transportation today on that, so I verified that. And we'd have to do that about every 5 years. Now, reducing a considerable amount of traffic that goes in through there, and we're talking a lot of the heavy freight traffic, too, you know, because 82% of all the freight that comes into the state comes into container traffic, comes into Port of Anchorage. So all that container traffic and all that, those heavy trucks and stuff that would be going toward Fairbanks, Prudhoe Bay, all of that could bypass all of that, which is a major stresses on that road and also reduces the length of that considerably. That's why it has been supported by the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce and points north in there, because they realize the significant savings that we'd have on trucking and reducing traffic, with wear and tear on these roads, what the state has to spend on these roads for maintenance. And so if we could reduce that considerably and get it out to 8 or 10 miles, or 8 or 10 years before we have to do rut rehabilitation, that's a considerable amount of savings, Madam Chair. And so then we look at the Wasilla pinch point. And all those of us who live in Wasilla or have been through there know exactly what I'm talking about when they talk about congested traffic into there, because you have Wasilla Lake on one side, you got the highway, and you got the railroad, and then you have Lucille Lake on the other side, and there's just a pinch point there, and there's only just so much room there. And that's been a over-congested highway for a long time, and so we're trying to relieve that congestion to make it safer. And again, we go to Wasilla to Big Lake, the most dangerous stretch of highway in the state. You know, and we're working to get that into a four-lane right now. But again, relieving the traffic off of that. And we're talking dual semis, a lot of that big heavy freight that would not have to go in through there. And again, off of KGB also. So the wear and tear on these highways, the safety for Alaskans, reducing these major accident rates considerably by bypassing that, improving traffic, freight, infrastructure, so we can help create, turn Alaska resources into jobs, is very important in what we're doing here. If we were to expand the Glen Highway to make that safer, because right now it's over capacity, so if we were to bring it into what it would be to handle expected capacity, the cost on that would be over $4 billion. So again, getting a bridge that's funded by private industry, much less expensive. We look at... Again, some of the maintenance on there, it's considerable. We're working with the federal government, with TIFIA, and I think Mr. Foster can explain that better than I am. It's federal highway funds under MAP 21 that are available now. And we do have a appropriations that look long-term in support by Governor Parnell on that. And Madam Chair, I think you have this. If not, we can pass it around and get it to you, where he appropriates $10 million this year and $35 million for the next few years up to 2018 for a total of $150 million. That would create a reserve fund. And Madam Chair, we call this a reserve fund because it's basically a loan. It gets paid back. It's expected within the first 7 years, maybe 7 or 8 years, depending on traffic, and we try and do the best we can to project that, to where the traffic that does start crossing that will increase, and it'll get to a point where it'll be revenue neutral because there's enough tariffs to start paying back this. And again, this would pay back into the reserve fund because for the first 7 years, traffic will be lighter until it starts building up. We get more construction done on the other side of the bridge. Probably housing from the Anchorage area would move over there, Eagle River. A lot of that would be more expansion over there. And as traffic continues to increase north, toll revenues would increase. And in about 7 years, expected to be out revenue neutral. And then it starts to be bringing more revenue back to the state. And that excess revenue, because this is getting some federal funding on there, is required to go to transportation projects. And that can be airports, it can be marine, it can be highways, it could go to a highway fund. You know, and again, in an effort to try and diversify our income revenue streams, where 90% of our revenue is coming from oil, declining rapidly right now, we're $1 billion in oil on our operating budget. You know, we have to find new ways to find revenue. This is an opportunity for the state to put over $1 billion within the first, 20 years or so into the state revenue that has to go to our transportation projects to relieve the funds of, you know, the congestion off our general fund. And it's done by people who are using this bridge and not coming out of state general funds. So, again, trying to, again, relieve the use of our state general fund, the pressures that we're going to be faced under the economic stresses that we have because of reductions in oil. Finding new revenue streams and diversifying our economy, as this has to be a must. And again, this is infrastructure that would also open up a lot of the development on the western side of the Susitna Basin. Half of the Kenai Peninsula borough is on the other side of Cook Inlet. And this year in the governor's budget, there's $400,000 that he'd put forth to see what is available out there for resource development in the Susitna Basin. Now, having this infrastructure project like this bridge available so we can go out and start developing those resources is absolutely critical to again, diversifying our economy and our revenue streams to the state. So there's a lot of benefits to this besides just the safety to our citizens, but again, diversifying our revenue streams, creating more jobs, finding more opportunities to take and turn our resources into jobs for Alaskans. And again, it pays for itself. And in the end, this project is ready to build. It's ready to go. And hopefully, you know, I try and have a little vision with this, Madam Chair. I look at the state's revenue stream right now, again, we're in the negatives. We don't have money for capital projects, for large capital projects. The state just does not have that available now. We're $1 billion a hole in the operating. Partnering with private industry to bring in $1 billion of private industry investment to create 1,500 jobs for the next 4 years on this project is absolutely critical to this state. You know, these are jobs. If we don't have job opportunities like this and partner with private industries, the effects on our operating budget are going to be huge. Hopefully this bridge will get us to the time when we're building a pipeline, to a dam, to maybe Donlin. This is a bridge to the future. I hope that we have the vision to continue on with that, Madam Chair. And I'll be glad to answer any more questions. Thank you for your indulgence.
Any other questions? I don't see any right now, but I do, let me understand, just make sure I understand, because if this all works out like you feel it does, and by the way, I don't mind having the state pay for some capital projects and some infrastructure in the state. Most states pay infrastructure. So I don't mind that, but I just want to make sure that I understand if this doesn't work out and if it doesn't come out, what private industry must be paid for, they're going to pay for this. However, if the tolls aren't enough to pay that, then the state pays it. Is that right?
Under the absolute very worst case scenarios, there has been some projections made, and they're within 5% of what they feel the worst could. I think Mr. Foster could probably explain those better, Madam Chair.
Okay, and that's not the end of the world if we do, because infrastructure, I think the state should pay infrastructure whenever it can. So I'm not concerned about that. I just want to know that the facts that we have are the right facts. And so now, do we have an updated financial plan from you? I know that there's been talk about the feds not maybe funding with TIFIA. And if that doesn't happen and they don't get that loan, then what's the financial plan look like at that point? What's the scenario? And so I kind of would like to know that. And is TIFIA on hold until this bill gets passed? I don't quite understand the correlation there. I've heard several different things, and so I just kind of want to know what the facts are. And so otherwise, I don't have any problems.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we can answer that. And you're right. There was concerns because passage of this bill is critical towards TIFIA, and we did receive a letter. Kubota received a letter September 25 about the state appropriating funding for this project. With that, we have a letter, state seal, signed by Governor Parnell, again stating that, and if I may read into the record.
Okay, sure.
It says that Mr. Candler, which is again referring back to the United States Department of Transportation from Governor Parnell, I have received a copy of your September 25, 2012 letter to the Kanikoram Bridge and Toll Authority. In that letter, you state the U.S. Department of Transportation is postponing consideration of our Transportation Infrastructure and Finance Innovative Act, TIFIA, letter of interest until the state appropriates or is reasonably likely to appropriate funding for the Kubota project. As you know, the Alaska Legislature has previously authorized the use of federal funds and has appropriated state matching funds to the project. Construction phase included in the statewide transportation improvement program. Kubota is currently purchasing the right-of-way and acquiring the permits necessary for construction. In addition, my capital budget will be submitted to the Alaska State Legislature in December, and it is my intent to include funding for the project reserve. And again, this is a letter of intent from the legislature for continued funding for the reserve. Kubota will continue to work closely with your office, and the state of Alaska expects full consideration by the United States Department of Transportation in your office and your office for an invitation to submit a TIFIA loan application on behalf of a successful project, signed Governor Parnell.
Okay. So has TIFIA responded back with that?
This was a positive response back to them, and I don't know.
Madam Chair, if I could answer that. They have responded back, and if I could quote something, is and this is a September 25th letter from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
But, excuse me, what was the date on that letter?
This letter was November 15th, 2012, in response to the September 25, 12 letter.
Okay, and so have you heard from TIFIA since they got the governor's letter?
Yes, and they are waiting for the legislation to pass.
Oh, they said that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this depend this so how what's the fiscal note for this then for this for your bill?
There, Madam Chair, there's a zero fiscal note.
But I thought
because this again eventually is a loan that would come back, and then the Department of Transportation has put a zero fiscal note on this again because it's a reserve account that I believe expects to get paid back, and I don't have a copy of that with me.
So the fiscal note is just because it's a reserve account, which they think that the toll fees will go into, and then whatever the contractor will get all of that, and if there's not enough, then the state puts in the rest?
That's correct, Madam Chair. If I could address a little bit on TIFIA just for some clarifications. The TIFIA program is being administered under the MAP 21, and it's a continuation of the previous TIFIA, but it has some very significant changes to it. There's $17 billion of eligible money or capacity or cap for the TIFIA program. That $17 billion equates to as a 33% because they have two models, 49% and 33%. But the indication we have from the Federal Highway Administration is that most of these projects will more than likely fall under the 33%. So if 33% of a project capital cost is eligible under the TIFIA program. So on a billion-dollar project, $333 million would be part of the TIFIA allocation. The $17 billion that they have made available equates to $51.5 billion in capital improvements. To date, there has 26 projects who have submitted a letter of interest, which our bridge is one of them, our project is one of them. It has been the criteria or selection criteria is a first come, first serve. If you meet the criteria and you're invited to submit an application, then you're basically in the TIFIA funding cycle. And as the projects come in, then it basically lowers that capacity. As I said today, there are 26 letters of interest that have been submitted. None of the 26 projects have been invited to submit an application to date. Out of the 26 projects that have submitted, it equates to 17 different states, including Alaska, that's looking for TIFIA participation. Again, there's $17 billion in capacity, which is $51.5 billion in actual capital money. Now, we have applied before for TIFIA through a letter of interest, even before we had a record of decision. The purpose of us applying for that is to stay in the queue, to keep our project familiar with the major project group out of D.C. for federal highways. We have not been invited on the previous letter of interest to submit an application, nor did we actually expect to be invited to submit because we are still working on the record of decision and our financial model. This project is now mature enough with a record of decision, the permits we have, the right-of-way acquisition, the governor's commitment through his capital budget to initiate the reserve fund, the legislation that we have in place. We're fairly confident, based on completing all of those items, that we will be invited to submit an application, and that's the next process under the letter of interest. The only other things that we were required to do before we submit an application or before we're invited to submit an application is go out for an S&P rating on the project. We have done that, or the Department of Revenue has done that on our behalf. The rating for this project is a investment grade rating, so it passes the test of TIFIA or the federal loan program. The other determination that came out of the S&P rating was that this project would have no impact on the state's credit rating at all. So the two significant, financial tests that was done by S&P showed the project was investment grade, which is what we needed for TIFIA, and it also showed that the project under our worst case scenario had no impacts or did not affect the state's credit rating at all.
And I have to go up to finance to present a bill, and so my vice chair will take over.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we kind of swap spots on that because that's where I live.
Representative Creston. Was that a question?
Yeah. When will TIFIA, when do you anticipate TIFIA is going to invite you to submit a loan application?
Through the chair, Representative Price Tompkins.
TIFIA has indicated through their letter that until we have the commitment of the reserve fund and legislation in place, they will not invite us to submit the application. We do not want to be in a position to have to submit the application until we have these mechanisms in place, because there's a time clock. There's a 60-day time clock that the Federal Highways, 30 days to respond to tell us whether our application is complete. And then once the application is considered complete, they have a time clock to actually make a determination. We need to have the reserve account created, initiated, partially funded through the capital or the governor's budget, and we need the legislation. We have our S&P rating. So as soon as this legislation is in place, we will then be asking U.S. Federal Highway Administration to move our letter of interest into a pre-application state.
Go ahead, follow up.
This seemed a little bit like a chicken egg situation, in that my understanding is USDOT says we don't want to give you a TIFIA loan until the state funds the reserve fund, until the state makes a financial obligation for the reserve fund, which I don't know, you know, what the limits on the reserve fund may or may not be. Whereas it would seem that for us to do our financial due diligence, we want to know what the financing plan for Kibata is, whether or not that TIFIA loan is going to be in place. So, you know, one of these two pieces needs to come first. And I mean, I get heartburn for the state to be on the hook for a financial plan that assumes a TIFIA loan that may or may not actually be in place.
If I may, through the chair, Representative Tompkins. First off, we cannot apply for the TIFIA until we have a project, and this bill creates that project. So there's maybe the chicken egg thing, so we're trying to make sure we have a project. As far as the financing mechanism is, again, the projections, they should be in your packet on toll revenues and where they come there, again, are there. And I point back to some of the bond ratings that were done off of from Standard & Poor's on this. You know, they feel this is a very worthy project, and they're willing to put their money behind it, private money. And so I think that shows a lot of credibility for this project.
Follow up. Well, I mean, the difference between a low-interest TIFIA loan and, I guess, what a general obligation, I mean, a general bond is, I understand, significant as far as the finance forecast for this project, which is why this project is, you know, really predicated on a TIFIA loan.
If I could answer that through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. It probably is kind of a chicken and an egg, and I would kind of look at it as almost, you know, pre-qualifying for a house loan before you go look for the house. You know, you go to the bank, you see what you can afford, see what the rates are, you kind of get into, you know, or the chicken for the egg. I don't know if I have the chicken or the egg first, but then I go out and look at, you know, what I can afford and what the house is. In this instance, what the Federal Highway Administration has told us is that, and I quote, and this is in a September 25th letter, it becomes clear that the issue is reasonably likely to be resolved favorably in the near future. And, you know, what that tells us is the passage of this language, the creation of the reserve fund, and the governor's plan to fund that reserve fund. Keep in mind, the reserve fund is not necessary until the bridge actually opens, because that's to cover the traffic. Now, in all due respect, is if TIFIA told us, well, okay, your project is not eligible under TIFIA, okay, we don't have that financial plan. I think Madam Chair had asked about that. At that point, we would have to evaluate whether there is another financial plan that would be as attractive. TIFIA, in some respects, is a gift not only to this project, but the multitude of these 26 other projects. The way the TIFIA structure is TIFIA loans anywhere between 33% and 49% eligible project capital costs. The private partner doesn't make payments on that until it's a greenfield project. They don't make payments on that project or on that loan until the bridge is actually open. And then the initial years, it's a very favorable payment structure because they know it's a greenfield project. Again, the part of TIFIA in this MAP 21 is to initiate new development, new projects, new infrastructure. Okay, so TIFIA, you know, is in a project like this, is so attractive to the private investor that we are trying to do everything we can on behalf of the state to secure that TIFIA loan. So whether it's a chicken before the egg, I don't know, but we're trying to do everything we can to secure that. Even if a reserve fund is funded completely, until a contract is signed, because there's still several more gates. I know the governor talks to me about different gates we have to go through, different decision processes. Is until the contract is actually signed with a private partner, the reserve fund is just sitting there. And if some point along the road the proposals come in, it's not attractive, or they can't meet our criteria for keeping the availability payment under a curve, a financial curve that we can manage, because it has to be affordable to the state. We have to be able to pay for it through the toll revenue. We are not looking to come back to the legislature every year and saying, okay, we don't have traffic, we need more money, need more money, need more money. So even in the RFP, there's a curve that they have to be under that curve. Okay, if they come to us and say, here's a proposal, and there's three of them, and they said, we can't make that curve, so we're not submitting. Well, that's their choice, okay? We make that curve, and this is how it works. We don't have a moral obligation, nor do we have a commitment for that reserve fund to be in trust to the availability payment until that contract is signed.
Mike? So, if we could, just for housekeeping, we've got 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
And I think we answered the question. And just for housekeeping, just to let you know, it's our intent next week. We will be coming on Tuesday to the Butchovich Room for a joint meeting with the Senate to hear the previous testimony on the action. Then we plan to come back here. We'll hear SB 31, if they have their updated business plan, and then we'll bring HB 23 back. But we have time for one more question, short question, short answer. Representative Feige.
It's not a short one, and it's not going to get an immediate answer, so we'll ask it next time.
You want to wait till next time. Any other short questions, short answers? Seeing none, you want to do a wrap-up?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your indulgence, members. You know, and again, I look at a project like this, and just briefly, what do we do if we don't do projects like this, knowing that we don't have money for capital funds to create jobs in our state? This, again, you know, 1,500 jobs for the next 4 years and $1 billion of private industry investment. And I'm in charge of the HESC budget right now, and the amount of people that are getting food stamps doubled in the last 4 years from 08 to 12, from 20 to 40,000. That's a pretty good indicator of our economy. That's when we had $3 billion budgets, capital budgets. Now, we don't have that money for capital budgets. It's so important to bring this private industry in here to help create those jobs for Alaskans. You know, or what can we afford to not do this? What's our future going to look like if we don't have these jobs and this private industry investment? And that's something to think on, I think, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence.
Very excellent testimony. Appreciate that last comment, especially at this time. It is 3 o'clock, and we are adjourned.